I think when most people hear the words invasives, they think about things like zebra mussels or maybe Asian carp in the animal world, among other things. But earthworms, invasives, well, they can be. And we'll talk about it today with a couple of guests. Tom Booz is the forestry invasive plants coordinator for the Division of Forestry at the University at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, excuse me. Also in the Division of Forestry with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is Bernadette Williams, who goes by Bernie, if I'm not mistaken. And she's with us as well to talk about worms here in the state and some of the problems they can create. So zeroing in on worms a little bit today with our two guests, and I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. You may have seen some forest damage done by the work of earthworms. And if you fish, are you careful where you dispose of your bait worms? I don't know if you do or not. You can call in and give us your own input at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to our Facebook page and post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Tom Booz, welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us. And Bernie Williams, thank you for being with us as well. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Well, we have, I'm sure, you know, we've discussed this a little bit in passing on the show in the past. There's an author, and the title of the book is escaping me, but Judith will remember it and give it to me, about invasives and the world of insects primarily. But she had a chapter on worms as well. And earthworms, you know, Tom? Bernie?
So I'll actually take that for Tom. So earthworms, a lot of people... I'm not here to bash earthworms and say that they're all entirely bad. They're great for your garden, but unfortunately in Wisconsin, we do have a problem with them in our hardwood forests, particularly in the northern portion of the states. It's a hard sell for most people to explain to them that earthworms are actually invasive and they're not native to this portion of North America. They were wiped out by the glacier. So the studies that I do in the northern hardwoods in Wisconsin, it pretty much just shows that earthworms are coming in by the mistake of a lot of people. Essentially, earthworms arrived here with the first settlers, the ballast from the ships. They were introduced. So what I see in the northern hardwoods is that the duff layer, the natural spongy layer of the forest floor, is being depleted and eaten by a lot of the earthworms. And this, in turn, sort of slows down the regeneration of our hardwood forests, particularly the maples. So it's something that we want people to be aware of. If you're an angler out there, we'd like you to dispose of your earthworms just as you would trash. Don't throw them in the water. Don't throw them on the side of the road. You give them a free introduction to the forest stand. So it's an awareness thing that we'd like to spread.
Maybe you could talk about the sort of the ecology of a forest. What happens in a forest? Because when those leaves come down, well, I'll let you explain it.
Sure, absolutely. Most people, when they go into the northern portion of the state, they'll walk in and they'll look at the understory. Most people are pretty used to seeing an understory where they see bare ground. To me, when I see that, I see a forest that isn't regenerating properly. You're missing a lot of the spring ephemerals in there. We're missing a lot of our native species. Common thing that I see in a forest which has an introduction of invasive earthworms, I see a lot of Pennsylvania sedge. Unfortunately, this is a telltale sign that the soil is being depleted. Earthworms, to go back in your garden, they're great. They're sort of like the engineers of the soil. They're working it through. But in a hardwood forest where you originally didn't have earthworms, it's very difficult for regeneration of any of our native species. And it gives an introduction, an easy introduction for any of invasive species coming in. So common invasive species that we're familiar with, garlic mustard, buckthorn, they easily enter in this way.
Yeah. And as we, yeah, go ahead, Tom, you were going to add to that.
I can state this as simply as I can. The leaves fall on the ground. They begin to break down through natural processes with the mycorrhizal fungi and just that the soil leaf litter interaction. And what the worms do is upset that in the way they decompose the leaf litter much too quickly. And so if you think about plants that need that sort of spongy, moist leaf litter to grow or for seeds to germinate in because of the moisture, it retains moisture just like mm-hmm. you mulch your garden. Same concept. If that mulch layer is no longer present, seeds desiccate. So that's kind of the simple way of looking at the impact of what worms are doing in the forest.
And if you take a look at like a maple leaf, that's going to take, what, 3-4 years to, if under normal, without earthworms, in order to decompose? I think it's somewhere around 3 years, isn't it?
For an oak leaf. It would be. Maple.
A little faster?
Yeah, much faster. Probably about a year or two.
Okay.
So oaks, and that's the interesting thing when you do any of these studies, you notice that the oaks have a better standing with the earthworms. They can tolerate it more so than sugar maple.
And also there's a question, if I'm thinking about this now, trying to remember, there's a pH kind of issue that is going on because I think our northern forests those are a little more acidic mm-hmm. soils, and the plants that are there like that.
Right. And so you actually do get your very right rutlarium, the higher pH, especially with the hemlocks, you get a higher pH of like 0.06. But when you have more earthworms introduced, you get a higher pH level of 0.12. Which is very hard for any of our natives to regenerate. And plus you lose that mycorrhizome layer. So it's very difficult.
Talking today with Tom Booz and Bernie Williams from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources today, and zeroing in with them today on earthworms and some of the problems that earthworms can pose in our northern forests. You may have a question as well, and I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, or just go to our Facebook page and post a comment at The Larry Mueller Show. I was reading the amount of construction that an earthworm or a group of earthworms in an acre can turn over is in the tons.
Yes. So I always, when I go out and I give talks on earthworms, I always try and tell people there's three basic groups that we always look at. There's the epigeic, the endoceic, and the anoceic earthworms. So there's these three different types. Generally, in North America, we can say that there's anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 different species of earthworms. But these three types working together seem to cause the most damage to our hardwood forest. And the ones that we're very concerned about right now are the anoceic species, which are the night crawlers.
Night crawlers, yeah.
So the night crawlers are the ones that we're seeing just popping up everywhere. But when you have them introduced in an area where you already have those other two species of the endoceic and the epigeic, they seem to really create a problem. I was actually just at an interesting site where people were, they'd over-fertilized their lawn. Because anytime you fertilize your lawn, you're introducing worm casting, the worm cocoons, to your lawn. So you're introducing these eggs, and any cocoon can have from 1 to 12 eggs. So you have these babies that are going to hatch. And so in the fall, then you have all of these earthworms coming up. But if you have this huge introduction, you'll get a population high. On the site that I was just looking at, just in a square footage, I was able to pull up at about 200 worms in just one area. So you have to think, even in an urban landscape, there's no leaf litter. So they didn't have to rake their leaves. They didn't have to do anything, because you have to understand these earthworms are eating the leaves and pulling them down into their vertical tunnels. And then if you have the other two species that are coinciding with this, you really don't have any grass. Your roots on your trees are being exposed. So it's all about awareness. They can do great things, but they can also be detrimental.
Let's turn to Andrea in Dubuque, Iowa. Andrea, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. With regards to the earthworms, we live in a place that's an 1870s house, so the ground around it is old and wonderful. It has great topsoil. We have tons of worms, tons. And is that a problem? And we also have white worms, I've noticed, when I've been digging to plant flowers.
Possibly grubs?
Possibly.
Yeah. So is that a problem?
Do you do a lot of gardening?
I'm sorry?
Do you do a lot of gardening, or are you...
We have a good amount of land, and we have lots of flower gardens as well as grass, and our grass doesn't look great.
Well, I mean, if you have so many worms and you have a lot of grass there, that's a common question that I get quite frequently. Is people say that, you know, my grass is sort of fading. You know, Pennsylvania sedge, it's a sedge, which I'll recommend to people if you want to have a green lawn, you can put in sedge. But if you want regeneration, I wouldn't recommend fertilizing. Go with the wildflowers that you have in your area. If you're going to put trees in, conifers can withstand worm infestations much more than any hardwood.
Okay.
I would
like my grass just to look good, too.
Yeah. Right. Well, the grass may relate to something else, but right. Tom, you were going to add something.
Yeah, I mean, the worms will definitely impact grass because that nutrient relationship is so impacted by the worms that grass can suffer. It's generally the way we're trying to spread the message with worms is it's really, really hard to get rid of them once they're there.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to not spread them any further. So I think in a yard situation, they're not going to be a huge problem. Certainly in a garden, they have the benefits of that quickly decomposing and kind of stirring up that organic matter that the plants need. But that's a manicured process site. In the woods, it's a different story.
Yeah, different story. Tom Booz and Bernadette Williams, who are with the Division of Forestry with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, our guests today as we talk with them about earthworms and the invasion of earthworms in our Wisconsin forests. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. They'll be here with us until 12:30. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about invasive worms in Wisconsin with our two guests, Tom Booz, Forestry Invasive Plants Coordinator for the Division of Forestry of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Bernie Williams is the Invasive Species Specialist for the Division of Forestry with the DNR as well. So great to have both of them with us today. And certainly if you want to join in with a question or comment, well, every line's filled right now, but here's the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. Don't forget, you can post a comment on our Facebook page or go to or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Joel, we'll go right to the phones. Joel in Milwaukee, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, first, I wanted to say I'm so surprised to hear this information. Every spring, like the first rains, there's always this worm migration across the streets and stuff, and I was always like the worm savior picking them up and trying to throw them on the grass. And so that was my first little anecdote, but I've had a question for a while about a documentary I saw about Scotland and an invasive species of black worm that was actually ravaging the worm population there so much that it was causing erosion problems. And I was curious if there is a natural underground predator to the earthworm.
Interesting. Is there?
So I'll answer both of your questions, Joe. So the worm migration that you're seeing every spring, I actually move the worms too, even though I'm all about don't move your worms and get rid of those worms.
Well, you're only moving them a few feet.
I'm just moving them a few feet, but what they're actually doing is they're all coming up to mate. So it's that time of year, it's spring fever for worms. So I always tell people, you know, it's really fascinating if you're a worm geek, you can go out and you can pick a handful of mating worms up and you'll get slimed and you can guess what that slime is. So that's my funny for you. And the other worm that you're talking about is the New Zealand flatworm. And they're actually having some severe problems with that in the United Kingdom, Ireland. It was an introduced worm. And we do have documented cases of it in Minnesota presently. I have had quite a few people tell me in Wisconsin that they've seen it as well. It actually eats night crawlers and it eats other worms. But if you put it into the system, you sort of have a battle of two invasive species, which is worse. And anybody that tells you that does any research, you know, you really have to look at the controls on that. And they definitely do cause erosion. The New Zealand flatworm, I'm sure you're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the years to come. I tell kids that it's sort of like a worm that will eat a nightcrawler like a milkshake. It just sucks it dry. So it's a pretty interesting species.
There you go, Joel. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Thomas in Manitowoc, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've got a couple questions. My first one is, when the earthworms eat all the organic matter in the northern Wisconsin forest, how do you foresee the landscape will change, and when will that occur? And the next one is, as a fisherman, what is the ideal worm bedding for retaining your worms?
Mm-hmm. All right. Bernie, you want to take that?
Sure. So the changes in the northern hardwoods, you can already see it. I'll tell you just a hint. If you happen to head up north this summer and you're out in the woods and you're going on any type of nature walk, take a look at the ground. If you see like a heavy layer, you have see red regeneration, you see some maple seedlings coming up, you see ferns, you see a variety of perennials coming up. That's showing you that there's somewhat of a healthy forest going on. There's also leaf litter. If you happen to see on another adjacent area where you see a lot of dirt, bare soil, you see a lot of Pennsylvania sedge, you don't see variety in the vegetation, you can pretty much guarantee that you have some invasive worms moving in. Another telltale sign is that you'll see a lot of the roots on the trees will be exposed. You'll see areas where it almost looks like the hardwoods are standing on stilts because it's really pulling the organic matter away. As for worm bedding, if you're keeping your worms, if you want to feed your worms, if you have leftover leaf litter from last year from raking your leaves, that's the best thing that you can keep them in to feed them with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just wet it down a little bit. Yeah, go ahead. Tom, you were going to add.
Your question about like what's going to be the future of the northern hardwoods, and I don't think we have a sense of that yet. I know in the east, the northeast, where the worms have been more of a problem for a longer time, or they've been more aware of it, you're basically taking the chance of losing tree regeneration. So, and then couple that with the input of invasive plants into our area, and if you have no tree regeneration, forests are going to change. It's either going to turn into thickets of some invasive plant, shrub, vine. So that's where forestry management is really the critical thing, is to try to get on top of this, try to get regeneration going in any way that you can to keep those forests sustained as we see them. Given climate change and everything, things are going to be changing anyway, but we can, in a sense, you can say the future looks grim, but also there's things that we can do to keep it intact.
We had an email from John who says, for years I've been putting my unused night crawlers around my camping site. I thought I was doing a good thing, and believe me, John, you're not alone. Why are there not posters around state campsites as there are for minnows and crawfish? This seems important.
Well, right, John, you're very right, and there will be posters and signage starting this summer. We want to make the public aware that earthworms should be disposed of in the trash just like anything else. So definitely the American Legion State Forest, they'll be the first to have the signs up this summer. We're rolling out the campaign to get people to give them the dirt on worms.
And we heard an email from Ann. I heard a report a few years ago that the worms that are causing the trouble are imported red worms, or at least causing some trouble, that are used for fishing bait, sold in garden catalogs because they reproduce so prolifically. Why are these worms allowed to be sold then?
That's a big question. Wisconsin currently has invasive species regulations on the books, but worms are not a part of it other than the crazy worm. We're going to be assessing some of these worms coming up in a revision to the rule to try to make that happen. They're sold because people want them, whether it's for fishing, for vermicomposting, and as long as there's desires, they're going to be sold. And that's what we're trying to educate people to slow down that demand for them so they're not sold as much. And if they are sold, dispose of them properly for at least for the fishing aspect of it.
Jeff in Sturgeon Bay, let's go to you. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. Question, the salmon pond out at Strawberry Creek, I go out and feed the fish. And some years, and this year being one of them, I find thousands of night crawlers in Strawberry Creek and on the screens at the salmon pond. And I asked the fish biologist, and I said, where are they coming from? And he said, not really sure. Maybe you should call somebody, and this program fits the bill.
All right. Do you want to take that, Bernie?
Sure. So, again, what you're seeing is that they're mating right now. So they all sort of come up during this. It can happen anywhere from March all the way through June when the soil starts to get to a more temperate stage for them. They come up and they mate. Even though they are hermaphrodites, they do have to mate. I can give you a quick overview of worm biology. So if you pick up a night crawler, which is what you're seeing, you'll pick up a night crawler. They're the big meaty worm. And you'll see that one swollen part somewhat in the middle of them. That's the saddle. That's the reproductive gland. That gland sort of sloughs off after they mate with one another. There's a lot of secretion going on there. And then it'll just roll off, and in that is the cocoon. So that's the casting that's full of the eggs. And why they're there, I could tell you, I mean, salmon pond, so you have, I imagine that there's a lot of fishing, a lot of anglers there, so they've dumped their worms. So those worms.
No.
This is raising the stocked fish for the lake.
Yeah, it's a rearing pond.
Right.
It could be from exactly what you do is you go and feed the fish, and if there's other people that go and feed the fish with worms and.
No. We use a commercial pellet. And these are just coming downstream in Strawberry Creek, and they catch on the upper screens that keep the fish in.
So what's happening is you've got an invasion above Strawberry Creek.
But why are they in the water? And these are young, impressionable fish, and I don't think this should be going on.
Well, I can tell you in the water, that's a big misnomer. A lot of anglers that we speak to, they think that if they throw their bait into the water, the worm will die. That's actually not true. A worm can survive for months in the water. So that's why we've been asking people to throw them in the trash. If they're coming downstream, I don't know if there's an area that's fished, whether they've dropped their night crawlers or bait alongside of the stream for years and years. But they definitely are coming out and moving in the water, and mating in the water is a pretty common occurrence for most worms.
Oh, there you go. Thanks for calling, Jeff. Appreciate your call. A caller from Rhinelander wanted to know how quickly they will spread on their own, or let's say you drop some night crawlers in a spot where there have been none. What happens?
That's a great question. This is what we like to tell people. If earthworms were only at their ability to move on their own, they can only move a half a mile every 100 years on their own.
Nah.
So the introduction rate, and like I say, I mean, people, anytime you go into a gardening area, anytime you bring in any type of vegetation, any type of horticultural stock, you're inevitably bringing in worm eggs. So you're introducing them. Anglers, anytime you're out recreating, the eggs can stick to your shoes, in the tread of your shoes, the tires. The things that we see in the northern hardwoods, especially with forestry, is that anytime there's logging activity, the eggs can come in on the tires. There's disturbance, and that's how they get moved around.
And Judy and Bloomer, it's your turn next. Judy, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I don't know where to start. We have lived in our house for 45 years, and I would say about 30 years ago, the neighbors and just people who liked to fish would come and pick night crawlers on our lawn at night. And my husband seems to think that the reason that we have such a crappy lawn is because of the night crawlers, but we have it would not make anybody happy to see our lawn. When you walk on it, it's it feels like you're walking on a corduroy road.
Mm-hmm.
When we had the dry weather a couple of years ago, we were on, it was, you know, the grass just, we lost almost all of our grass, but we've been, it's been coming back, and we have dandelions, we have other things, but where there's bare spots, you know, like where from traffic patterns, all those little, you know, you can see where the worms have come up mm-hmm. in the night, and they've left those little holes with the little crumbles around it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's wrong with our...
with your lawn? Well, it could be a lot of things, but Bernie?
So those little holes that you're seeing, they're called middens. So that is the home of one nightcrawler. So nightcrawlers are sort of solitary creatures on their own. They live just solely in one vertical tunnel, which can actually go down to 2 meters. So when they come up through that hole, and then they're pushing out the dirt. And then you'll just see like piles of worm poop find something mm-hmm. better to say. But then they're also pulling down your vegetation, and they're pulling down any type of leaf litter that you would have left over. So if your neighbors are picking up those night crawlers for bait, that's great. But remember that those night crawlers have been reproducing, and those eggs are in your soil. And to reach a population high would be very difficult. But you definitely, it sounds like you have a pretty heavy infestation of night crawlers.
It sounds that
Sorry
way.
Sorry to say.
Oh, there you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Judy. I want to give Ryan a chance to from La Crosse to join in. Let's go to Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, hi. Just calling today. I push mow my own lawn. It's an acre lot, and I bag the back so that the dogs don't drag in the clippings, and just wondering if I've got a pretty healthy population of worms in my compost pile now, but just wondering if there's anything, you know, any certain type of worm that's good for that, or just let nature take its course there.
For the composting, you don't want night crawlers, so you don't want any of the anisaic species in your compost. You definitely want the more of the epigeic species, which are just the small worms that you generally find in the leaf litter on the top of the soil. You can also have some endosaics in there, but on a whole, I always tell people that night crawlers are not good for composting.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much for that call. A Vivian call from Green Bay said she's gone on field trips. She's read the information, convinced that there's a lot of damage that earthworms can do. But when she tries to tell other people, they never believe her. How might she talk about it in a convincing way?
Well, I think the easiest way, and thanks, Vivian, I know what you're speaking of, because most people look at me like I'm crazy as well when I tell them that earthworms aren't all that great. And the first thing I always tell them, they're great in your garden, but they're not great in the forest. So there's no way, once you have an introduction of earthworms, we really don't have a way to control them. It's just merely education. Once you have them, you know, control the spread. It's the same way with any type of invasive species. Control that spread, minimize the damage that you're going to do. But earthworms, you can just tell them that they're not native. They're not native in our natives. We may or may not have a native species of earthworms left in the Driftless area of Wisconsin, but we don't really have a confirmed recording of a native species yet. So, again, these are invasive species. They were introduced. So it's just something you have to go along with that. And Tom?
I would try to find a site that's impacted by earthworms and one that's not, and try to explain the difference so they can visually see and feel the difference. I mean, the spongy soil in the non-infested area, the leaf litter, probably better plant communities. I mean, that's the visual is probably the better way. Otherwise, we will probably have some photos up on our website soon that will, you know, clearly demonstrate a good woods versus an infested woods.
And you do have other materials about earthworms up on your website already that I found quite interesting.
We do, and our site is developing, but there's also great resources out there in Minnesota. They have the Minnesota Worm Watch, and we plan to have a Wisconsin Worm Watch in the coming future. Also, Cindy Hale out of the University of Minnesota, she's done extensive research, and she has a book out on invasive earthworms, which is great. You learn a lot from it. Also, Lee Frelick, who is with the University of Minnesota, he's a telltale source of anything to do with earthworms. So you can just Google him. I've spoken to him quite a bit. He's a font of information. So there's a lot of available resources out there.
Mike in Seneca has a question or comment. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. I either missed that. I just tuned in a while back, and she was saying that there was something that killed worms, and I missed that. And then there's such a run going on to that's not the right word effort going on to kill moles. And I know moles eat all varieties of worms and grubs, so. I think moles would be good in the case of your discussion. Is that true?
Okay.
Well, there are a great deal of animals out there that eat earthworms, but we have such a high population of them. I think we would be overrun by moles if we brought them in to control them. So that would be kind of difficult. Though I don't have anything to kill worms. We have a fun thing to do if you want to do a worm survey, if you want to see if you have earthworms, and it's also great for kids. The easiest way to do an earthworm survey is to take a third a cup of mustard powder. You can get mustard powder pretty much anywhere. You mix it with a gallon of water. You clear the vegetation off of your soil, and you just pour it on your soil, and I guarantee you within 1 to 2 minutes, you'll have all different species of earthworms writhing to the top of the soil. So it's sort of like a Medusa. It's really fun. I mean, I've done it so many times, I still get excited doing it. But it's earthworms, they breathe through their skin. So the mustard water, it doesn't harm them in any way, but it irritates their skin, so they have to come to the surface. So it's a common thing that anybody that does earthworm surveys or research uses.
So just the old plain old mustard powder that you can get in the grocery store.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you're Bernie, you buy it in 50-pound bags.
That's right. I have 50 pounds in my cube. And also, we have the Mustard Museum in Wisconsin, and they're all on board with the worms and the mustard. So if you want to head over to the Mustard Museum, he has plenty of mustard for you.
Oh, there you go. Well, another caller, sort of going along with what Mike said, another caller commented that the duff is very important for salamanders and ground nesting birds, too. So there is some importance there.
Oh, absolutely. There's a great deal of research being done in Minnesota on the ground nesting birds, the oven birds in particular, and how they're affected by forests that have heavy infestations of earthworms. So it's in the salamanders. There's, the salamanders, you don't see them quite as frequently as you once did. But while they do eat the worms, it's not their chosen food.
And Tom, this is Invasive Species Awareness Month. June is coming up, yeah. Is it not?
It is. And I just wanted to put a plug out, worms and invasive plant relationships. It's all about invasive species. And I would direct you to a website for the Wisconsin Council on Invasive Species, which is invasivespecies.wi.gov. It's Awareness Month in June. We're going to have a celebration June 18th, which is where we're going to give away some Invader Crusader awards to those folks across the state that have gone above and beyond their duties in promoting, destroying invasive species. That's going to be... You can find that on the council website as well as the IPAW website, which is the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, and that's at ipaw.org, ipaw.org. Just help us celebrate Invasive Species Awareness Month. It's going to be a fun time.
It's going to be a fun time, and it's great. It was very, very interesting. I have lots of comments, emails in, all saying, hey, this is really interesting. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today to talk about worms. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here, Larry.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for being with us. Tom Booz is the Forestry Invasive Plants Coordinator for the Division of Forestry with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Bernie Williams is the Invasive Species Specialist for the Division of Forestry for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We'll probably get him back. We'll do it again. It was interesting. Taking a look tomorrow, we'll learn from two staffers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection about the state Do Not Call list. And then at 11:45, Joe Rhodes talks about Apple computers and gadgets. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.
As a variation on Tuesdays with Maury, Lisa Paul tells the story of her heroic campaign to save the life of her beloved Russian teacher, a Soviet dissident who was fighting for her freedom. I'm Jean Faraca. Join us today at 3 here on Earth.
Support for WPR comes from Chad's Carpentry, dedicated to building sustainable additions and renovations, serving the Madison area since 1992. Examples of projects available at Chad's Carpentry.